This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast as we are now right in the thick of the NBA playoffs, moving on to the conference semifinals. I can't believe the first round's already over, but here we are, and I am your co-host, Andrew Reich. I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray.
Oh, I can believe round one is done. Well, most of those four and outs, unexciting.
Well, there was one exception.
Okay.
trying to transition that one. Yeah, the first round, like you were saying, I know people were kind of fascinated with the Bucks and the Bulls because of the fact that they were able to climb back in with two straight wins. But I've always told people, anytime a team wins two games in a row after being down 3-0, they always, always lose game six, and usually badly because they run out of gas. And that's definitely what happened to me, in my eyes, to Milwaukee. One was a sweep. One was five games. One was five games. Cavaliers-Celtics was a sweep. The Hawks-Nets was surprisingly the only competitive one. The Wizards-Raptors, I don't know what that was.
Sweep.
That was worse than a sweep. That was like a whitewashing.
It was, but, you know, with most of these, it was everything we said it would be.
Yeah, we predicted that. We said that. We weren't sure about the West, but with the East, we were pretty sure that these were all going to be pretty elementary. And in a way that they were, it was just a little bit of a surprise for one of them. And we'll talk about them when we get to the Eastern Conference side of things. But in the West, we knew things would be interesting. We knew all those teams were really good. So many 56 or more win teams. The Golden State Warriors at 67 wins looked pretty strong against the New Orleans Pelicans. But the one that everyone is still talking about came off a Saturday night, ended with a Game 7, the same night as Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao. For those who were able to watch that one where Floyd Mayweather won by unanimous decision, I hope you enjoyed it. But I'll tell you this, if you spent, and I said this on Facebook, if you paid $100 to watch that fight and actively missed Game 7 between the LA Clippers and the San Antonio Spurs, you cheated yourself.
Well, the one thing with the Mayweather fight was, you know, you could basically see that you could see why people are going towards UFC now. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, I caught, you know, bits and pieces and highlights, but it's just like it was slowly paced. Both of them really didn't seem like they wanted to make a major mistake. They just played too defensively.
Yeah.
And you could see why, you know, three rounds, 15
they
minutes.
They boxed UFC. Not to lose. Not to
yeah.
Win.
Just plus, this, you know, the match should have happened, what, 5-7 years ago?
Yeah.
So, you know, you could see why boxing's no longer the big deal.
Yeah, it was like a battle of techniques, you know, Manny Pacquiao being the southpaw, a lot of power, and then you had Floyd Money Mayweather, who's like a great defensive boxer, he's able to back away from any trouble, great in the clinch. Like, he's just the guy that you just can't get any good punches on because he's so elusive and he's so fast. And it was obvious that that got the better end of Pacquiao, and Floyd Mayweather was still able to get good offense in while averting any offense that Pacquiao could offer. Big fight, it's over now, and boxing's dead again. So, you know, let's not worry about that one anymore, but we are going to talk about the game that came on early, because I think the TNT and NBA people were smart to know that everybody was going to watch that fight at about 11 o'clock. So they booked the Clippers-Spurs game in L.A., which is actually not that far away from where the boxing match was in the MGM Grand in Las Vegas. L.A. and Las Vegas, what kind of a flight is that?
It's a four-hour drive.
Four-hour drive, one-hour flight.
Yeah,
so not that far, you know. And then also, remember, they had the Kentucky Derby. And that's...
Nobody cares about the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, but, dude, celebrities flock to the Kentucky Derby. flock to it. They love it. Now,
yeah, from 6 p.m. to 6:05 p.m.
Yeah, but they may have had enough time to fly out to the MGM Grand if the celebrities were able to cash in the tickets for both the Kentucky Derby. They probably took the winnings from the Kentucky Derby and then used it for the concessions. The Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. I don't even want to know how much the concessions were at that fucking place. But, no,
just
we're
getting
not
back to basketball.
Yeah, let's get back to basketball.
To
how about
all
that?
The conspiracy theorists, you don't put your best game on every night at midnight Eastern, where half your audience is going to bed every night.
So you think this was a bit of a happy accident that they were able to schedule for like 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock
Central
time or Eastern time?
But every you don't put your best your showcase pieces where nobody can see them.
Well, the
that's why this the West is the best and they're doing it on purpose. No, it just happens to be that way.
Well, TNT's always had the doubleheader. I remember when Nitro was still on TNT and they would have to put on Nitro after the NBA playoffs were over. Most of the time, the NBA playoffs was a doubleheader on either TBS or TNT. So if you wanted to watch Nitro, it was literally on at like midnight because that's when these games would end at the second half of the doubleheader. The other problem is that, and even though it doesn't make sense geologically, or geographically, whatever you call it, I think it's geographically, a lot of the Western Conference teams aren't really Western teams. You know, a lot of them are from the Southwest Division. That's where five of the teams went out of the eight were in the Western Conference playoffs. And then you got the Clippers and the Warriors, who are legitimate West Coast teams. And then the Memphis Grizzlies, who are, like, on the other side of the country. Not in the West. But, now we're not going to argue about that one. We will talk about the L.A. Clippers coming through, pulling it off, and somehow, some way, going seven games after dropping two home games against a really game, really prepared San Antonio Spurs team. Took San Antonio's best shot. Chris Paul got a hamstring pull, played through it, had a remarkable game, including the game winner with a second to go. A few kind of crazy things happened down the stretch. It was really great basketball in general, though. It was probably, I'd probably be safe to say, it's probably the best first-round NBA series I've ever seen.
It ranks up there.
Mm-hmm.
It has been one of the I don't know. It's just the fact that all the endings just seem to be like squandered by one or either team because they're all close.
The Clippers clearly blew games two and games five. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought the Spurs sort of blew game six.
Yeah, you can make that's a good argument. They were down pretty big though, but they were coming back.
Yeah, they came out, but it was just that, in the end, it was just, some dumb plays. But, this was the matchup everyone was looking forward to, and it lived up to the hype. And
I think it exceeded it.
Yeah, it was the expectations were already high to begin with. It gave me everything I needed to as a fan. And it's just like, well, San Antonio, if they just had one more game, they could have been second place. But they didn't. They didn't all season. We're like, well, when is San Antonio going to kick it in? Well, okay, game six at home. You could close it out easily. You're at home. You never lose at home. And then, nope, okay. And you wind up losing in seven.
I don't want to dwell on the specifics of the series too much. Maybe we'll do that another time when we talk as the Clippers continue and we look at their strengths and weaknesses. But San Antonio played great in almost all the games, save for one, which was game one where they got blown out. But there was one thing I definitely noticed with the Spurs in terms of their problems and why the Clippers had so much success. Every time they would run that high pick and roll, their defense left so much wide opening in the middle that when they ran the pick and roll with Blake Griffin, they were able to just destroy whoever was in the middle or stuck having to guard Griffin on an island on that little roll after Paul comes around the screen. And they did it over and over and over again, and they never adjusted. The other one is the fact that you just left shooters open, guys like Austin Rivers of all people, J.J. Redick, Matt Barnes. They were able to just knock down open shots when they overhelped on Griffin because Griffin was killing them so bad.
They just sort of looked tired. They looked a step slow. And, Tiago Splitter got eaten alive the entire series.
He was injured. Now, I don't think Tony Parker's injured. I think he's hit his twilight. Tiago Splitter was injured.
You could say he was injured, but You can't let Blake do that to you.
What were your takeaways from the Spurs? Now that, I mean, I can't even believe it's over for them. I mean, you know, they were the defending champions. If they had gotten past the series, I probably would have favored them over Houston. What do you take away from the San Antonio Spurs season now that it's actually over?
Like I said, with Oklahoma City, they just never kicked it into that final gear. It was just like, well, what are you guys sitting down in seventh all season?
I think they did, Adam, but I think the Clippers just found that extra gear that no one.
Well, the Clippers had the extra gear, and the entire West found that extra gear. Mm-hmm. And they just never, they just didn't have enough. And, you know, as much as we make fun of Austin Rivers, he really made a difference in the series.
When Big Baby Davis played with a lot of heart, too.
Yeah.
I don't think he could pull that off.
Well, he played with heart because Spencer Hawes did absolutely nothing.
Well, it looked like he was done with an Achilles. That looked like it had torn Achilles the way he was hobbling. I thought, oh, he's finished. I know what that is. And then there he was back in Game 7.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know. So, you know, they're very hobbled up now, and I don't know what they really have for Houston.
Well, that's a good transition because that's going to be the second Western Conference series in the semifinals that's going to start. But we're going to go ahead and talk about them since we, you know, talked about the L.A. Clippers a little bit. And the Clippers are as the 3 seed. So if you look at the actual rankings and seedings, it really wasn't an upset at the end of the day that the Clippers beat the Spurs, even though if you ask Vegas, it kind of was. But the Clippers as a 3 seed will play the 2 seed. And that was the Houston Rockets who dispatched the Dallas Mavericks. I would say pretty easily. Would you agree?
Yeah, Dallas sort of dispatched themselves.
Well, Rondo, it failed.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, when this series season began and you and I, you know, decided to fall in love with one another on this podcast, you were a Celtics fan and Rajon Rondo was your point guard. And the story was, where does he go and what kind of an impact will he have on that team? And he went to Dallas. Boston got a little in return, not a whole ton. And Rondo had just an absolute disastrous fallout with Rick Carlisle, Mark Cuban, and them. I don't know what it does to his free agency. We'll talk about that another day. But, I mean, how much of it was Dallas falling apart or Houston just being a very good, very deep team?
Well, Houston always was that good, deep team. And Josh Smith signing really helped him out a great deal because he looked to be on fire the entire series. Mm-hmm. He was happy with his role. He didn't complain. He didn't take 40 shots, which you know, is surprising. But
did you know that him and Dwight Howard are AAU teammates?
Yeah, and it was him, Josh Smith, and was it Bosch was the third one?
Well, he was in Atlanta. He was in Georgia Tech.
Javaris Crittenden was the third AAU.
Yeah, team. Yeah. No, they remind us every time they do like a connection on an alley-oop. There was this one game, I think it was game 2, where they connected on an alley-oop like 5 times, a power forward to a center, which is strange. But there were so many things out of the Rockets that I really did like, even though they did play really sloppy against Dallas. They kind of got saved by the fact that Dallas's defense is so bad. You know, one of the final scores, I think, was 130 to 128. But, I mean, there's a lot of things to like about Houston. I thought Terrence Jones really looked good. I thought Pablo Prigioni gave him good minutes. I thought Jason Terry kind of found a second life in Houston. You know, there was a lot to like there.
Yeah, but, you know, for every positive you could say for Houston, there's no Chandler Parsons. Dirk just looked old.
Mm-hmm.
The Rondo thing really killed them.
The best defender
playing
for James Harden was Al-Farouq Aminu.
Yeah, that's when basically your two best guys are Al-Farouq and Monta Ellis. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
not a good sign. But it's just that's what I took from it. Was just Dallas really crapped out. And Houston was able to play sloppy and didn't really have to worry because it didn't really seem like much of a challenge in the end.
Okay, now they're moving on, and they do have the home court because they had the 2 seed. They won the Southwest Division, even though I believe they were only separated by like a half game at the end of the season. But they do have the home court advantage, and you know, it's going to be tough for the Clippers. You know, they just had this game that ended at, you know, 9:30 Central Time, which is where I'm at, which would be 10:30 Eastern Time. A grueling game, got pushed to the absolute limit by San Antonio. Chris Paul has what might be a severe hamstring injury. We're not sure exactly yet. We'll know more. But now on Monday night, you have to turn around and on the second part of a doubleheader, and you have to go to Houston to go play the Houston Rockets, who are have been off for about 5 or 6 days. So what do you expect here first in game one and maybe going forward for the entire series?
Well, the good thing is they're at Houston. If they were at home and had to do this, it would be really tough. But if you drop game one in Houston, I don't think anyone's going to blame them for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just sort of, you know, we don't know how severe the Chris Paul injury is. We don't know how tired these guys are.
Yeah, rest versus rust, which I think is kind of silly. Because I remember when the Spurs – you probably remember this 2 years ago. The Spurs swept the Grizzlies, and the Heat went 7 grueling games with the Indiana Pacers. And then they played in the finals, and I didn't see any difference between either of the teams. I thought they were both ready, you know.
Oh, yeah, well, because they're professional. But it's just – you know, that was a very tough series with San Antonio. And, you know, I think Houston should win game one quite easily. And as for the series, you know, I think the Clippers have – more complete team and should probably take it in 6 or 7 again.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, game, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint.
I look at the team stats and I see a few key things. The points per game is close. The Clippers are a little bit better. Houston is what had made the most threes in the history of any NBA team. So obviously they're ahead of the Clippers in that department, even though the Clippers aren't too shabby either. The Clippers shoot a higher field goal percentage by a mile. They both get to the free throw line a lot. Surprisingly, even though you got Dwight Howard and Terrence Jones and Josh Smith in Houston and DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin, who gobbled up a bunch of rebounds in LA for the Spurs series, neither is a very good rebounding team. You know, they're both teams are kind of a jump shooting team. Assists, it's pretty close. Defense, it's pretty close. Field goal percentage defense is pretty close. Here's the key differences. Possession-wise, Houston plays a lot faster than the Clippers do, even though the Clippers can get up and down if they want to. Bench, Houston definitely has an advantage. You'd agree. Now, that's not really an actual stat. But
I think both those stats are sort of fictitious because, don't forget, Dwight Howard was out a long time, and with him out, you can run a way lot faster with him out, and your bench will be scoring way more.
Mm-hmm.
So
you think the entire Houston regular season was a bit of an outlier because Howard wasn't involved?
Yeah, he's not involved. So, yeah, you can play run and gun all day you want because you don't have a big 7-foot center with bad knees lugging them up and down.
How do you think Howard looked in the Dallas series? He had an incredible one in game 3. I think he had 26 rebounds.
He looked good.
He looked like great Dwight Howard or really good helper Dwight Howard?
He looked like, you know, I would say 85% Dwight Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, I didn't think they needed to bury the hat, you know, just go full speed on the Mavericks.
Mm-hmm. Another key one, and this is huge. I think this one might determine the series. Turnovers. The LA Clippers were second. The Houston Rockets were second to last. Now, I watched the clincher with Dallas in Houston. It was a very sloppy game. The only reason Houston won that game is because Dallas was all out of sorts. If they do that against the Clippers and the Clippers get out in transition with Griffin and Paul, even at 85% or 75% with Chris Paul in the hamstring, they are going to destroy Jason Terry and Pablo Prigioni and those little guards. They are going to have no shot against Chris Paul if he can get out in the open and they start slopping up the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Turnovers will kill you.
What do you think is the key matchup between Houston and Los Angeles?
The key matchup? Ooh.
Harden with Barnes or whoever they could put on him?
No, because you're not stopping Harden.
Okay, so they could just throw Rivers on him and just have just as much success.
Pretty much, I think, because Harden's just going to want to score 40, 50. He'll score that much every game. Mm-hmm. I think might be Josh Smith on Blake Griffin.
Ooh. That's a good one.
Because Terry, okay.
I think Howard Jordan is a wash.
You agree? Howard who?
Howard and Jordan. I think that's a wash.
Yeah, they're pretty much a wash. That'll be, you know, then they'll just be hack each other and nobody will score. That's why I'm just like, can Terrence Jones / Josh Smith stop Blake Griffin? Because you're not going to stop Harden, so You need these two guys to sort of do something.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we'll see any Haka here, even though we have one great example in DeAndre Jordan, which was obviously exposed by Greg Popovich many, 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 many times, and also Josh Smith and Dwight Howard in Houston?
I expect to see a lot of that. It's just going to be horrible to watch.
But I do think the games will be fast, quickly paced for sure. I think that serves just as much of an advantage to the Clippers as it is to the Rockets. So I do all agree with you. I think the numbers do lie in that sense. I just don't know how good the Rockets really are in the clutch, because I haven't seen James Harden win a really important playoff game yet.
Well, we haven't seen the Rockets win a playoff series in how long?
Like 2009. That was when Yao Ming and Ron Artest were still there.
Yeah, so let's just, this is uncharted territory for a while, so.
Okay, speaking of uncharted territory, in a ways, we'll talk about a team that's kind of at the catbird seat in the Western Conference now that the defending champions, the San Antonio Spurs, so we will have new NBA world champions. I had to do my Howard Finkel there, Bruce Buffer, or whatever crappy ring announcer you want to make up. But the team in the catbird seat now in the Western Conference is the one that people are going to be kind of staring down now, Adam, and saying maybe they're going to dominate and have this greatest season ever for real. And that's the Golden State Warriors. They swept my New Orleans Pelicans, even though Anthony Davis was fantastic, still didn't help much. Steph Curry, unreal. Klay Thompson, unreal. Draymond Green, unreal. And they're going to play a Memphis Grizzlies team that's got a little bit of attrition going on.
Yeah, this isn't a good time for Memphis to get injured and Mike Conley to break his face, and the Warriors should be an easy 4 or 5 games again. There's really the only thing Memphis has going for it is the ability to slow the game down to a tremendously slow pace.
They definitely did that to the Portland Trailblazers, and the Blazers were so uncomfortable with that. You could just tell.
Yeah, but the Blazers are also fighting a war of attrition of their own.
Yeah, theirs was worse.
So that's the problem, and you could go as slow as you want, but all you just takes, okay, I'll just wait, 3, 2, 1, 3.
Let's jump backwards for a second, and we'll get away from it. If the Blazers were at full health, first of all, would they beat Memphis, and would they have been a great challenge for Golden State?
No.
No?
I had Memphis all the way. Even if they were healthy, Memphis just has that defensive tenacity.
Mm-hmm.
And Portland's really, they don't have that. We go Robin Lopez and, Aldridge, but, Nick Batum is a finesse guy. Wesley Matthews, a finesse guy.
Yeah, Batum's weird, man. Like, his numbers look solid, but then when you watch him in the games, it's almost like you never even noticed him,
Yeah.
He's almost like Matt Barnes, like a really overpaid Matt Barnes. Yeah,
he's just there, and he'll get his points, he'll get his numbers, but he's not really scrapping in with everybody. And, like I said, same with Wesley Matthews and Allen or Flalo. Okay, as a sixth man, he would have come in. They should have had they gotten Jeff Green, like I was saying, they should have way before the trades. It would have been different. But you got the worst of the two, and Memphis just has too much. But now you're running into the juggernaut that is Golden State, who should just cut them down easily.
You hit the nail on the head with the grit and grind, which is their, their tagline in the grindhouse, the FedEx Forum out in Memphis, Tennessee. Now they don't have home court advantage. Obviously, they didn't have as good of a record in Golden State as Golden State did. Nobody did. You did hit the nail on the head about the defense, though. They were second in points allowed. Their defensive measurements are all very good. But the problem, though, Adam, is that when you look at like the interior type of numbers, like blocks, rebounds, field goal percentage, defense. I mean, Golden State has all that beat by a mile over Memphis. The only ones where Memphis could take advantage is the free throw line, where they do get a lot of free throws, and they don't turn the ball over as much as Golden State does. So they're going to have to hope that the Warriors just play extra sloppy in order to take turnovers, slow the game down, limit possessions for Golden State, or cause more misses and turnovers than they do makes. But against Golden State, that is incredibly hard because they're such a great shooting team, and they never lose at home. They've only lost twice at home all season long.
Well, what you need to do with any hot shooting team is just cool them off, get a couple cheap early fouls, and get hands and faces. And
they have really people for that role, though, which is a good advantage for them. You know, a Beno Udrich, a Nick Calathes. Not great players, but players that aren't scared to get their face in the down in the sewer and get dirty, you know?
Yeah, and that's the only sort of hope they have, and I don't really see that slowing down this team too much.
Well, the problem, though, is that slowing down doesn't help much if they make all their threes, because they're first in the league at making threes. Grizzlies got a little better at making threes, but not by much. Like, last year they were last. This year they were second to last. Their field goal percentage is good, but they don't take a lot of them, you know, because like you said, they're absolutely determined on that slow, sludgy type of pace, you know?
Yeah, and that's sort of the problem, I think, because the way to beat Golden State is to have like David Lee and Andrew Bogut beat you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not built to have to do that.
Who gets put on Curry duty and who gets put on Clay duty? You got Courtney Lee, you've got Calathes, you've got the one we just mentioned, Beno Udrich, and then also as a wild card, if you want to put a small forward, you've got Vince Carter.
Oh, we could just hope Mike Conley comes back.
There's Trick or Tony.
You got to put Tony on
Clay
Curry. No, because you need the size of Lee to be on Clay.
The problem with Tony is that he's so much better of a help defender, like coming in from behind and causing havoc, than he is being a one-on-one defender. So they've got to have a primary defender on Curry and Clay, and Tony's going to have to help out off of that other person.
Just run straight traps all day.
Yes, I think it's the only way to try to misdirect the offense. The only problem is they have so many good shooters at them, with guys like Harrison Barnes and Draymond Green and freaking even Maurice Spates. Like, it's hard to really stop them. You would have to either hack Andre Iguodala, which the Pelicans tried a little bit and didn't work that well, or you have to hope that Andrew Bogut just that when they pass in traffic that they get deflected.
Yeah, that's the only. You have to let their big man beat you.
Did you notice any weaknesses out at Golden State when they played the Pelicans?
No, it was like a practice.
You didn't think they were a little sloppy?
They didn't need to be tight. They didn't need to be 100%. If you're just, you know, you're playing with a team who has, you know, their first time in, it's just a good story, much like, you know, Chicago and Milwaukee with the, you know, okay, they got in, all right, they did it. They're, you know, they're not really serious to take it, but, you know, that's why they, you know, New Orleans couldn't handle that big lead at the end, because they didn't know how to play with it.
That one thing that Golden State showed me in that third game when Curry made a miracle shot, okay, to tie the game and put it into overtime where they eventually won. But that did show me, like, you cannot give a team like that a second chance. You know, there's some great teams where you can give them second chances and they don't take them. Like, they don't take advantage of them the way that you think they would. The Golden State Warriors are one of those teams where you cannot let them
exactly
get a second chance.
And I was just like, just watching that final, like that free throw, or not the final, the shot. Like, nobody was rebounding. Mm-hmm. It went right back to, you know, who?
Spates,
who,
and he did a handoff right in the corner.
Because nobody was around him. It's like, well, why aren't you guys, you know? And Anthony Davis had to barrel into him at the end. But it was just like, how did that play break down so fast? Like, all you have to do is just stay where you are and get the ball.
With Harden playing Monday and Curry probably playing Wednesday, I'm not sure what the rest of the schedule is at home. Is this the week that we find out who wins league MVP?
No, because it should have been league MVP is not playoffs.
But what I'm saying is, are they going to try to get the announcement in this week?
I don't think there's a rush. They might just wait till the
conference finals and have that Hakeem Olajuwon, David Robinson type of thing where someone wins the MVP and it's like, that's my trophy.
Yeah, they both shake hands in the court. Like, oh, okay. I think they might just wait to see how the first two games go. And
that's true. Like, then you could save it for game five. Because
The point is, I don't see why they should wait to this point, period. The regular season's over. You should be announcing this 1 to 2 days later.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think they like holding this one out because remember they still haven't announced most improved player, so that's obviously going to be Jimmy Butler. So I got a feeling they're waiting for Game 3 when they play, you know, in that series, which we'll talk about in a second, and then they'll do the league MVP, which will be game five of that series. So I think that's a pretty good train of thought. I mean, I'm just thinking out loud, you know, this has nothing to do with the series as much, but it does talk about Steph Curry, who's almost transcended as a superstar now. With the Spurs gone, are the Warriors the prohibitive favorite?
I thought they always were the favorite.
But are they a slam dunk now? I mean, slam dunk's a little harsh. Like, that means that no one's going to even come close to beating them. I wouldn't say that.
No, because the Clippers or the Rockets could take them to six games, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to go through to the end as it's their season. But I don't see, you know, Memphis is just too injured to really provide much of a challenge.
It's going to be tough for Memphis. I mean, slowing down Golden State isn't going to help you much because they're such an effective field goal percentage team, and they get so many rebounds and blocks, and they share the ball so well that slowing them down doesn't do much because they're just as efficient in that atmosphere as they are in a speed game. So I think we've got a very, very solid base there. I think Memphis will fight. They fight for everything they've ever gotten, but I don't know if they've got enough gas in the tank to get past Golden State. We're going to move on to the Eastern Conference now.
Do we have to?
Yes. We have to go to the Eastern Conference. And the first one is now last for the Western Conference. Because of us talking about the Clippers and that amazing series with the Spurs, we went with the later series first and then the first series after. This one will go in the proper order. The first series that's going to be played is going to be the Atlanta Hawks, and who are the number one seed in the East, and they're going to be playing the fifth seed of Washington Wizards, who absolutely butt wiped the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, they basically, that's the old, you don't need to turn on to the playoffs. And yeah, on one hand, you have Rondo who's like, I don't care. And then you have the Wizards like, okay, we will now turn it on. And it's like, oh, well, this isn't the team I saw floundering all for 4 months.
I was actually on Extra Point with Scott Criscolo, so I kind of betrayed you a little bit. I think I jinxed Chris Criscolo, his brother, who's like a huge San Antonio Spurs fan, because I was talking about how the Spurs were probably going to win the Clippers series because they were right in the middle of Game 6 and all that happened. So, Chris, please don't blame me. But I was talking on Scott's show, and I want to ask you this. I think it's ironic that the Wizards are playing the Atlanta Hawks because, in a way, historically, are the Wizards the new Atlanta Hawks, that second-round team that just can't cut the mustard?
Are you asking, can we make a more boring series than the one we have here?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you know, after watching Atlanta and Brooklyn, that was just unexciting.
Well, keep going, because I got a point about that, too.
Like, you know, okay, we mentioned it. Brooklyn needed to get a little stronger and start pushing Atlanta around. They did. They got, you know, two games out of them. But it was just Atlanta just, to me, seems soft. And we saw it, Washington destroying. But it's just like this series, like, I'm like, I don't. Who's going to lose to Chicago or Cleveland? It's just unexciting.
For the Wizards, I think they're – and we talked about this before the playoffs even began, I think. I'd said if the Hawks got paired up with the Wizards at any point, I think that would be a really tough matchup for them because the strengths for the Wizards is their interior with Nene and Marcin Gortat, who shoot a high field goal percentage. Their rebounding is very, very good, and they've got an elite all-star point guard in John Wall. Now, Jeff Teague ain't, you know, butter and bread. Okay, he's a really good point guard. He went to the All-Star game. John Wall's better. He is. So you got Nene and Gortat inside. The interior rebounding for the Atlanta Hawks, huge weakness. They're obviously their Achilles heel. And the defense of Washington is almost as good as Atlanta's. So what do you see here when you look at, like, the statistics and then when you look at the eye test with Atlanta and Washington?
Well, the eye test, the first thing you see is you're going to have Kyle Korver guarding Paul Pierce.
That's actually even, if you ask me, because Kyle Korver, really? To me, is an underrated defender.
I don't see him as doing much. He's just sort of the help defender guy we need, so I don't see – he's not a lockdown guy.
No, he's not.
And Pierce seemed to show, like, hey, I'm still alive.
But if Pierce bites those pump fakes that Korver is in love with on those threes, that could be rough for him. because they're so prevalent on ball movement.
Well, we know all they're going to do is just pass the ball, you know, Harlem Globetrotter style till they shoot a three. Mm-hmm. That's all they're going to do. They're just going to keep just
that's their game
tossing around. Yeah, toss around till finally somebody's open.
Did you see what you see how they did that to Brooklyn in the sixth game? They just did that to death on them with the extra passes.
That's all they did was just, okay, if I pass, two more. And that's not, you know, all you can do is hope you hit them. Which, you know, you're not getting a rebound, so playing in Brooklyn with in front of nobody, playing in Atlanta in front of nobody is a lot different than playing in front of a place that has fans who actually care.
I don't know what the key matchup is, but I'll give you two key players in the series, and I think that's the one that steps up the best is the one that's going to help get the job done. I'm looking at Bradley Beal for the Wizards, who every now and then has a great game, and then he'll kind of disappear every now and then. And the other one is Damari Carroll for the Atlanta Hawks, who always seems to have a good game.
Ah, that's what I was going to say my matchup was, too.
Yeah. Now, they're not going to be matched up with one another. Damari Carroll's a little bigger. He might get matched up a little bit more with somebody like Otto Porter. But it's depends on which one steps up the biggest.
Yeah, Beal really, you know, it was like, oh, he's a max guy. He's good. He really regressed this year.
No, it's coming up this year for the summertime.
And, you know, the playoffs, he was there. Then he didn't really stand out. And was it, I don't know, nobody really stood out because Toronto just was so bad.
Wall's assist numbers were unbelievable in the Toronto series. He just sliced and diced Kyle Lowry. But I don't know how much of a comment. It's like we said with Dallas and Houston. How much of it was Washington looking really good, and how much of it was the Raptors just absolutely quitting?
They didn't quit. They just
They quit.
I don't know. I thought they just didn't have. They tried and just failed.
That's quitting.
No, quitting is just Rondo and all right. I'm done. Yeah. Well, you know, I'll just do my own thing. No, they didn't quit. They didn't quit on Casey. They just didn't have a talent. It's a very, you know, I still say Atlanta will probably do it because all they're going to do is just shoot threes.
Well, that's a key. Washington is 26 in three-pointers made, and Atlanta is third. The field goal percentage, actually, Washington is better. But the offense of Atlanta is by far better than Washington's. And like the defenses are almost even, like I said.
Like, Atlanta needs to get one of the two big guys in foul trouble, and just sort of make him play small ball and get Chris Humphreys in or I don't even know, Kevin Seraphin in, and then just sort of run circles around them because you could pick apart their bench. And if Otto Porter comes in the game, it's like, okay, we know nothing good could come from this.
Yeah, I agree with you there. We might see more Drew Gooden and Chris Humphreys and Kevin Seraphin so that they could try to swamp up the lane. I thought that was a key mistake that Lionel Hollins made. I think he kind of obsessed too much with putting Brook Lopez in the interior and focusing on him as a primary big when he should have used a couple more bigs to try to gang rebound with guys like Mason Plumlee. And I don't think he did that as much as he should have. I thought that was a mistake, but the Brooklyn Nets did more than I even thought they would. I was a little scared. If you're a Hawks fan, and there are quite a few of them at Place to Be Nation, I've heard, you got to be a little bit scared of how they played against Brooklyn and how they didn't really give a lot of fight. You know, when they could have just, like, there was a game in game four where it went to overtime where I felt like the Hawks should have put them away, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, that's a lot of questions came from that Brooklyn game. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, it was the old, okay, we know Darren Williams he'll never be the guy, and Joe Johnson's on the downturn, but there was just, I don't know, it was just, I don't know whether Atlanta was like, we could still go at, you know, 90% and win this easily, and who cares if they get a game.
And remember, game five was tight because Allen Anderson and Jared Jack went off in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was, like, I don't know. I still say Atlanta didn't go as hard as they should have, but maybe they just don't have that.
How you think this one goes? Six games? Maybe seven?
I'll say six.
Not seven games for this one. You don't think the Wizards can push that hard?
No, because the Wizards have a very, you know, fragile team, and
they do have a complex. I agree with that.
One injury, even if it's just for one game, will take them out.
Mm-hmm.
because, you know, there's a steep drop off between, like we said, with Chris Humphries, Otto Porter.
Yeah.
Even, you know, was it Ramon Sessions?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. If Wall goes down for some reason and Sessions has to come, turn the lights off, the party's over. You know?
Exactly so.
The one thing Washington has, I'll give them credit, that Atlanta doesn't have, and we're going to keep saying this about Atlanta until it's over, is they just don't have a star. They don't have a superstar. And that works to their benefit, but can also work to your detriment at times. And John Wall is the Wizards' star player. You know, they're going to have to focus defensively to stop him. And whether it's hedging on, you know, on high ball screens, whether it's dipping into a zone so you can force him to take open jump shots instead of finding, like, shuffle passes when he tries to get into the lane, or kind of, like, bumping him. Whatever they can do, they're going to have to figure out something to slow Wall down and not let him control the tempo of the game, because he can do that.
Yes, that's the problem, is with a team like Atlanta, which just doesn't matter. They're just going to keep passing and shooting threes. You can be out-dictated of the tempo quite easily. Mm-hmm. You can put another team into the game just by running your strategy, which isn't really clock persistent.
Yeah, and the thing, though, with the Hawks is that they do like to play slow also. They're not exactly run and gun like the Warriors or the Rockets. Like, they're a team that likes to play at a kind of a steady pace. So if the Wizards think that playing slow is going to help them, I don't know if it really will. But that's the only way they know how, kind of like the Grizzlies. So it's, in a weird way, it's a little like Grizzlies-Warriors, which is the other, you know, 5-seed versus 1-seed matchup in the other conference. And it's kind of the same. It's a little similar, but there are definitely some stark differences in terms of personnel and strengths. The next one is the one I think a lot of people are talking about. It's been taking the headlines because of a couple of major happenings that happened in the final game when the Cleveland Cavaliers eliminated the Boston Celtics in the first round. But game four definitely came at a price. And I'll give it to you, because you are the Boston Celtics fan. You could kind of explain what happened.
Well, it got really chippy at the end, and Kendrick Perkins was punching Jay Crowder. Then Kevin Love and Kelly Olynyk are fighting for a ball, and Kelly Olynyk separates Love's shoulder.
I asked Scott and Chris this, and they didn't agree. I asked another person, and they didn't agree. And I have an impassioned stance on this. Was Kelly Olynyk's move on Kevin Love a dirty play?
No.
I say yes by a mile.
I don't think he's that coordinated or skilled to be.
No, but he knows how to pull somebody's arm off.
That was just more awkward than anything else.
I mean, I think he knew Love was going to try to go for that loose ball, and he pulled him in the opposite direction just to be a dick.
I think, I think he wanted to stop him and sort of spin him around, but since he's so clumsy, he wound up, you know, separate his shoulder.
Oh, so he's the Jeff Hardy of the NBA. He's dangerous because he doesn't know better.
Sort of. It was like, you know, you want to stop somebody, but you don't want to hurt
them.
You don't want to hurt them, but it's just like, okay, I'll just stop you, you know, we'll just have, you know, rough play. And then he's tripped over himself and then wound up hurting him. But you don't try to do that. He's not a goon.
Well, you know, he's a hockey guy, so maybe he is a goon. But it's not a basketball play. I watched it 5 or 6 times, you know, in a 2-day span, just kind of analyzing it. And I know what was going on before it. Kevin Love was giving him the armbar, you know, when he was trying to box him out. And nobody likes that. Nobody likes getting their arm trapped when they're trying to defend a guy on a box out. But it's not a basketball play.
I agree. Like, you know, I do, you know, I was sitting at work.
He did it to teach Love a lesson. He did.
No, I don't think that, but it wasn't a, I'm going to break your arm. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, I'm just going to sort of.
I don't think the idea was, I want to hurt you.
No. It was just one of those accidents that happened. It was just sort of one of those, like, you're not getting this rebound.
Maybe I'll be that guy in the party because I'm the only one who believes it. But now, J.R. Smith,
that was
no excuse. No excuse, yes.
That was just a swing of the right hand right to the head. And
you can I said this on Extra Point also. You can make the justification almost as much of Olynyk, because when the way he swung his fist, if it hadn't been balled, you can say he was just loosely trying to grab a rebound. You know, that it was kind of a basketball move.
It looked like
but
he was trying to
ball his fist. You couldn't defend it.
It looked like he was trying to box out like a 7-foot guy.
Mm-hmm.
There was no reason for the arm to go that far up.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that I don't think it looked like so much more deliberate than Olenek's. I thought they were almost equal, but because of J.R. Smith's reputation compared to Olenek's, which is none. Now, Olenek got suspended for a game. J.R. Smith's is way more impactful for their upcoming postseason series against the Chicago Bulls. We haven't mentioned, but we will get into him because he's suspended for the first two games of the postseason, and Kevin Love is done for the entire season, most likely with a shoulder surgery.
Yep, the war of attrition, and just to wrap that up, you know, the J.R. Smith has a history of it. He did it 2 years ago, so that doesn't help him. Like I said, Olenek just, it wasn't a basketball play. It just looked out of place, but it didn't look, it just looked clumsy to me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that because I'm a Celtics fan.
Mm-hmm.
It could be on any team. It just looked clumsy.
You know what? Let's, before we go to the Bulls and that series, let's kind of talk about the Celtics. What did you like out of the Celtics?
They were there. It was their, you know, you guys worked hard. You got rewarded. They played hard. Obviously, they didn't have talent.
You like Marcus Smart a little more than you did before?
If he doesn't take stupid shots and feels the need to play hero ball, he's, you know, the solid, he'll be a solid defensive guy.
Yeah, I felt bad for Jay Crowder, though. I felt like they just wanted to get after somebody, and Olenek wasn't on the court, so they went after Crowder.
Well, Crowder also got into it with Perkins.
Mm-hmm. And that was the retaliation was J.R. Smith's back fist.
Yeah, so it wasn't like Olenek,
as they call it in MMA.
It wasn't like Olenek was, you know, scrapping with anybody. Crowder was in it, you know, the whole time. So, you know, they were in, they didn't have a talent, but they kept it, you know, competitively down by 8 the entire time. But the thing was, you know, just moving on to Chicago, because, you know, Celtics are now going fishing with everyone else. Mm-hmm. Chicago still has a coaching problem, even though they shouldn't have one.
You mean a lack of identity?
It's just, no, people just don't like Tom Thibodeau for some reason, and
I think
they're still attacking him.
Yeah, I think they get into the theory that Thibodeau plays his guys a little too tightly down the stretch of games. Now, I didn't see even an inkling of that in Game 6, when they absolutely torched the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, I think the Milwaukee Bucks ran out of gas. And it seemed like that they were just kind of ready to call it a night or call it a season because they didn't have any more bullets left in their chamber, I guess, to, you know, for lack of a better term. But so I can't take much out of that clincher, Adam, you know, because it didn't really show me anything. It showed me that the Bulls, when they're really good, are great. And when they play against an opponent that plays really poorly, they can blow them out. Well, any playoff team can do that, you know. What kind of scared me with Chicago was that they had a chance to close out the Bucks in Game 5 and they didn't do it, you know. And that, I think that kind of raises a little bit of a red flag, you know, kind of ironic because their uniform color's red. But it spoke to a bigger problem that Thibodeau might have a tendency to kind of get a little too tight in games and not give the ball to his best players when they need it.
Well, who's the best player, you know? Derrick Rose?
Pau Gasol is their best player. He's their best interior guy. He's their best shot blocker. He's their second best rebounder.
So now you got to sort of go, you know, inside out now as opposed to
slow
Derrick
it
Rose.
Down. Yeah. Now, listen, defensively, the Cleveland Cavaliers, even without Love, they were decent, but their field goal percentage defense is bad. So maybe having the guard play with Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler, which they've been relying on more and more, with Derrick Rose coming back from his injury and playing really well at times, and Jimmy Butler just playing great altogether. I haven't really seen him have a bad game yet. I think they might be more in tune with trying to have more balance like they have all season long, trying to shoot threes a little bit more, trying to get out in the open, not go inside out. Do you think Love's injury, though, is going to change that game plan? Do you think he'll go back to the inside-out game?
It'll change the game plan because, you know, you're losing a tremendous, you know, all his numbers were down, whatever. He was still a tremendous talent on the court.
Great rebounder.
But you still have LeBron James out there. And you can have him at the four, or you can have him at the three and put Tristan Thompson at the four. You know, you can team defense the big men.
Mm-hmm. With Mozgov, who's not a great, like,
Mozgov and Noah will cancel each other out. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of like Shumpert on Butler to slow him down a bit.
Yeah, well, here's the other thing. I think we talked about this before, but now we can really delve into it. What do you do with Butler and LeBron? Because Butler's defensively, metrics-wise, has had the most success out of all the small forwards in the last few seasons with LeBron James. But if you waste all that – here's the problem, though. That was when he was sort of a defensive role player type. Now that he has so much more offensive responsibility, along with all the minutes he logs in, which is the most in the NBA this season, can you rely on him being a two-way guy in this series, draining all of his defensive energy to guard LeBron, who's one of the toughest – defensive assignments in the history of basketball, and still asking him to be an offensive linchpin?
You can't have that right now. If we're tied two to two and it's a three game series, okay, yeah, now you're gonna have to toss him on him.
Yes.
Now it's just sort of, you know, it's just LeBron's gonna get his points. There's nothing you could do about it. You know, you're gonna put him on him, you're gonna Dunleavy, or there's not really many people, you know, go big and put Gasol on him.
Taj Gibson, possibly. And then kind of go a little big inside, but I don't know if that's going to work either. Even without Love, you know, Norman Rockwell, who's the guy who was one of the guest guys with me for the Western Conference in the first round when we previewed it on NBA team, he subscribes to the theory that without Love, they actually are a little better because they can play more wide open.
Well, without Love, you just replace him with a role player as opposed to somebody, you know, who needs things, mm-hmm. who needs, you know, his touches. He needs to be on the court. Here you just have other people. Okay, you're the defender. Shut up and defend. You know, you're the three guy. Just shut up and hit a three. Don't, you know, you don't need to try to find Love a role.
Yeah, we're going to see more guys like maybe a Mike Miller sighting, maybe Sean Marion. Probably Matthew Dellavedova every now and then if they want to go small.
You'll see a Kendrick Perkins goon sighting and have him try to take out Noah.
Yeah, which he's good at, and he can take the suspension.
Yeah, they'll both, you know, I could see them both, like, you know, starting to get chippy with each other quite soon.
Yeah.
You know, I could see a game three mysteriously J.R. Smith's back, Perkins, okay, mm-hmm. goes out and starts fucking with Noah.
And the other thing we would talk about Butler and the defensive assignments and what you do there if you don't want to waste his energy. The same is kind of goes for Derrick Rose, because he had a couple of great games against Milwaukee, particularly game three when they went to double overtime. And then he had a couple of stinkers, including a last possession where he basically lost contain on Jared Bayless on an inbounds pass to lose the game. Defensively, Derrick Rose does have a tendency to kind of get lost. He does. Now you got Kyrie Irving, one of the best one-on-one point guards in the game. What I'm saying is that even though Love's out of the picture, we might see almost the exact same thing defensively that we saw with Boston when they played against Cleveland. Would you agree? With the top two guys just going to town on them?
Well, yeah. That's sort of the way you had, because Boston, even though they didn't have, like I said, didn't have the talent, they sort of showed how to keep Cleveland close. Mm-hmm. And because Cleveland didn't, you know, they weren't up 30. They weren't up, you know, destroying them. It was a competitive match. So I think it's sort of, wow, if they can do it with nobody, maybe we can do it.
And the other thing, too, is we didn't know how Love and Irving would play in the playoffs. Love played pretty well before the injury. You know, he had game two and three were pretty good. Kyrie Irving was awesome. Awesome. You know, I don't really remember him having a bad game in that Boston series. Now, Chicago is different, obviously. You know, when you look at the steals per game, the blocks, the rebounds. Rebounding-wise, Chicago's got a heavy advantage. Blocks per game, for sure. Free throws is pretty close. Three-pointers, Cleveland is better. Cleveland's definitely got a better offense. I can't deny that. Chicago's defense and rebounding is a tad bit better, but not by very much. It's a very even series when you look at the team stat, is what I'm saying. But when you look at those positions, small forward, point guard, I do think it's a heavy mismatch for Cleveland.
Well, for one, for it being an even matchup, isn't that sort of what we said going back to the previews? They weren't like one team will win 60, the other will win 59. It's just going to be close the entire. This is 1 and 1A.
Neck and neck. Yeah.
You know.
But
so,
what do you see here, though? You know, if you had to make a pick.
I still got to go Cleveland. You don't bet against LeBron.
In the East.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, as good as Chicago is, you need to stop LeBron, who always seems to have that extra little trick in his pocket to do what he needs to do, whether it be his, you know, 8-foot travel, his little crab walk, or, you know, somehow, you know, mysteriously be on fire from three. He always has something and you need to stop him. And okay. What are you going to do if he feels like being like a power forward, if he feels like being a small forward?
We'll close out, but I wanted to throw you a curveball in terms of this question, and you can just rifle out any name at me. Give me a name, because there's always one or two. Give me a name or two that you think might come out of nowhere, who's kind of a role player on any of these teams and might make a play, and we'll say at the end of the series, you know, I never thought that that guy had it in him, but he proved me wrong.
Well, it needs to be Tristan Thompson, who's just been very mediocre and content to go there. Now Kevin Love out, he needs to really step up, because behind him there's who? I don't even know if there's any other big men left on that squad. We're not counting Perkins in his 5 minutes. As far as Chicago, there's really, you know, there's no surprises left on that team.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, you're going to have an Etuan Moore hit a mysterious, you know.
And everyone knows who Nikola Mirotic is. He was runner-up for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, and, you know, Dunleavy's back and healthy, so we all know what he can give at, because he's, what, 33 now, 34? So there's really no surprises unless your boy McDermott comes in and decides he feels like being an NBA player.
Mm-hmm. Give me one in the West, like any player from those four teams in the West. Like one player where you're like, man, he might do something crazy.
You can go Houston, Terrence Jones.
Okay.
He has the ability to really take over that game. He's a great athlete, but hasn't put it together yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can spend all their focus trying to shut down Harden and Howard, and all of a sudden this guy squirts through.
You know, I can't pick any of the Clippers, because all the Clippers played well in the Spurs series because they had to. They had no choice. So every time I watch the Clippers make plays now, going forward in the Rocket series, I'm kind of like, yeah, because I saw them do the exact same thing like the last series. Like it, I don't want them to run out of gas in this series or the next one because of how much they got drained from the Spurs series, which was an emotional roller coaster for them. But I wonder what guy from that team is going to be able to really step in and pull the job off. I'll give you one in the West and one in the East. The one in the West, I think we have to keep an eye on, because, and even though he's been around the block, he's played for good teams, but he's going to have a lot of responsibility against Golden State, is Courtney Lee of the Memphis Grizzlies. I think he has a lot of responsibility, especially if Mike Conley doesn't look the same after the facial fracture, because he will come back for the series, but he definitely won't be back for the first game or two. So Courtney Lee's production is huge for Memphis if they're able to keep that series close. In the East, I would say Otto Porter Jr. for the Washington Wizards. If he plays well, that series. If he plays. No, I think he'll definitely play. I saw him play a lot against Toronto. That's why I say that. I thought he played more against Toronto than I really thought he would. You know, and if Paul Pierce starts slowing down, gets in foul trouble, Atlanta is able to kind of pigeonhole him to the bench because of their speed, then I think that you might see Otto Porter Jr. a little bit more because he's taller and they're going to want him to rebound more, you know, because he's a better rebounder than Pierce is. He really is. So I wonder if we're going to see a really great performance out of him, because there's always one or two. You know, I remember when Lance Stephenson did it against the Knicks, like in 2013, where all of a sudden he was just awesome. He took over the game and no one knew who the hell he was.
Yeah, and also for Washington, you'd expect Beal to step up too.
Yeah, but Beal, we know. I mean, people know Bradley Beal. You know,
they know him, but they don't know him. They sort of know him that Jimmy Butler, like, oh, he's good.
Yeah, he's he's like a hardcore. He's a hardcore. You know, could he be like a casual guy, like a guy that casual fans know?
Exactly. He's just, you know, he's there. He's good, but to be the superstar he thinks he is, you really need to step up now against Atlanta.
After the first round, have any of the matchups that you imagine going forward have made you change your mind?
Nope. I'm still, even with the injuries, I still got to go with what I'm going with.
Okay. I feel the same way. I'm actually the one who picked the Clippers, even though it was against conventional wisdom, but they proved me right for once. And I hope the Clippers can pull it off against the Golden State Warriors. Because I think that would be a fantastic, or I mean, pull it off against the Rockets and play the Golden State Warriors. Cause I would love to see those two teams go at it on the West Coast. Cause those teams despise each other. And I just want to see those two teams go at it. That would be fantastic. I think when it comes to the East, we got what we wanted. We got Cleveland and Chicago.
Yeah. And it'll be like, you know, previous times with all the actions in the the semifinals and the conference finals, nobody wants to see because all the action is already gone. Because, you know, Atlanta, Chicago, meh. Atlanta, Cleveland, meh.
Yeah, I think the meh is going to get shaken off once we get past the Cleveland-Chicago series, and then the winner of that one probably plays Atlanta. That's when things are going to get fascinating because now you're going to punch your ticket to the finals. You know, there's no meh in the Eastern Conference Finals, in my opinion. In my opinion, like when you get to the conference finals, it's big boy time, you know?
Yeah, it is. But it's just, you know, all the excitement's this round, not next round.
Yes. Yes. I agree with that. I think this is kind of like the last throes of like the real, like the, you know, we complain in the beginning of the episode about double headers and how you have to stay up late at night. But there is this fun about the fact that there's so much basketball being played. Even when there's only eight teams left, there's still a lot of basketball being left to be played, you know, and there's fascination with it. With the first round, there's almost too much basketball being played. It's almost like, could we please get this over with, you know?
Yep, it's, you know, there's, well, nobody expects, like, the 8 and 7 seeds to do anything, so it's just like, okay,
yeah, we're going
get their games on, get them off. Mm-hmm. Why are you putting this at prime time? Bury this one, bury the 1-8 game at, like, 2 a.m. Mm-hmm.
But we're going to be finishing this one up, and we've got a really fun episode. If anybody liked the Gone Fishing version that we did from between the first round and this series preview, I think people are going to like the next one. We're going to be doing Gone Fishing for the I believe it's going to be the Eastern Conference, right?
Yeah, one of the two.
50-50. I think it's the East. Yeah, it's definitely the East. So I think everyone's going to enjoy that one, but I want everybody to have fun with the playoffs. It feels so fresh. You know, I'm not trying to slam the Spurs, but it does feel a little fresh that we will have a new NBA world champion, and it's going to be one of these eight teams, and we don't know who it is. We got a pretty good guess on a couple of them and some of them that might not have any chance at all, but it's just going to be really fun. I hope everybody enjoys it. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Enjoy the playoffs.